Okay. We're learning this Torah. Last week we didn't learn inside at all. I was giving more of Hakdama to this unbelievably difficult and beautiful Torah from Rav Kook on Ma'ase Bereishis, Ma'ase Merkava. Chochmas HaKodesh. This mimer is the mimer of Chochmas HaKodesh. All Chochma that is true. That's what we were learning last week. All Chochma that is emes comes from Chochmas HaKodesh. Was that Akiva? I say hello. How are you doing? Okay. All Chochma that is emes comes from Chochmas HaKodesh. It's Chochmas HaKodesh. The root of all truth is Chochmas HaKodesh. The problem in history has been the division, the separation between the Mayim Elyonim and the Mayim Tachtonim, the higher waters of Chochmas HaTorah, the deepest waters, the Chochmas HaTorah, the secrets of Torah, and the lower waters of human wisdom, of honest human intellectual endeavors. They were torn apart, and we were learning last week that at the end of time, as the Zohar Kodesh predicted, beginning in earnest in the year 1840 by the non-Jewish calendar, Tafresh, by that time, it would begin in a very powerful way to be the reunion of the brothers that were separated, of the Chasna Kala that were torn apart, of the higher waters and the lower waters, of the higher wisdom and the lower wisdom of this world. And now we're going to begin to learn the Maimer more. Now we're going to begin to learn more inside. We haven't started learning it. We're going to learn it now inside. And we're going to use, you have the pages that Moshe David sent you. We're going to use Rav Aviner's not yet published commentary. Maybe in the meantime it's been published, but I don't know. I received this. It wasn't yet in the stores, in the farm stores. So you have the photostat in front of you. And it begins with Kishahakira Hamadois. Now we're going to have to do every line carefully. Normally we read the whole Maimer and we try to say it. Here we're going to learn it line by line because it's a very delicate and difficult Indian. So we'll learn each line from Rav Kook in the bold print, and then we'll learn what Rav Aviner helps us a lot to understand. Kshachakira hamadoyis holeches amoytzeis diyukim mekuvanim besoch ha'alilos kulon shlatohu v'havohu. Now one of the favors that Rav Aviner does for us is he breaks up Rav Kook's sentences that, as you know, could sometimes go for a page. There are sentences of Rav Kook that go almost a page. And he just breaks up the sentence, and let's try to understand it. Kshachakira hamadois. Chakira hamadois means scientific research. It doesn't only mean science. It could mean also in the humanities, but human intellectual research. Kshachakira hamadois. Mostly Rav Kook is referring to science. Mostly. His Indian was not so much, of course, literature and the humanities. That is very, very, very polluted with all kinds of Gilei Raya, Shvichas Dom, and Avodah Zarah. The main Indian we're talking about through this entire Maimer is, of course, Ma'aseh Bereishis, is science, understanding the world that we see. Now, we learned last week, we learned from when we were in yeshiva, that the Ramban explains how the beginning of creation was with that very, very sublime, mysterious Chomer Hiyuli. Chomer, some matter, some physical matter, but nothing that could be touched or seen or anything, some very sublime matter. That Chomer Hiyuli that the Torah calls Tohu. Tohu, meaning that it's not something that could be understood or experienced or imagined. That's the tomer. The tohu is the chomer hiyuli of creation. Afterwards, the vohu is that Hashem took that tohu and then was the first day of creation, second day, and he formed all that exists from that primal, mysterious chomer hiyuli that's called tohu. That's tohu and vohu. Now, science is occupied with the study of vohu. Bohu, meaning I'm looking at a tree. Was is does? Like, what is the tree? What does it consist of? How is it possible that from a little seed that comes out to be like a redwood? How do you have fruit coming from? What is this fruit? How does it come from the tree? This science. Science is busy with the world of vohu. Bohu. Bohu. That's what science is busy with. Now, until 1840, the chakira madois, scientific research and study, did not lead to any findings of acceptance of belief in tohu. Some shoresh, some non-physical, invisible, mysterious shoresh root to all that exists. It wasn't their world. So you had people that were very, very religious, and their entire mitzvah was dealing with tohu, spiritual things. And the people that were involved, the so-called scientists in the earlier years, they were just they used the kelim that they had to study vohu. What did they have? And how did they study? How did they study trees? How did they study the stars? Whatever kelim they had. But there were two distinct worlds. There was the spiritual tohu that was left for the religious people, the galochim, the shvesterin, and the rabbis lahavdol. All of those people, they're the ones that deal with tohu stuff. And the scientists would become mostly apikarsim and minim and heretics, and they were oisikin. Bohu. Thus is thus. This is the world. Now what began to change in 1840, at that time, the Tzar said would happen, when the Mayim Elyonim, Mayim Tachtonim flooded the world and began to move towards each other, was that people began to think, you know, maybe it's tohu vavohu, you know, not just tohu and vohu. Maybe there's tohu vavohu. Like maybe we're talking about a shidduch. Maybe there's a shaychus here between tohu and vohu. So if Cook writes, k'shachakira hamadoyis holeches umotzeis diyukim mekuvanim, when scientific inquiry and research moves on, and finds the yukim mekuvanim, finds hints, clear and directed hints and pointers. Besocha lilos kulon shlatovavo. So Rav Avinair explains. Achakira hamadois. So keres b'daikonus gedola eskol hamitzis. Scientists study very, very carefully, to the best of their ability, with great care and caution. We're talking about choshuva scientists, not choshuva scientists. They study with tremendous care and tremendous caution, as kol hametzias, all of reality. The scientists have, beginning in that time of the middle of the 19th century, scientists began to find something unbelievable, shocking that has changed the whole world. Scientists began to realize that there is a tohu underneath the vohu, meaning that the hand of the Creator, there's something mysterious, undefinable, that is at the root of all material existence. There's a unifying force in the universe. There's a common denominator. There's a gene of some sort that is present in everything they're looking at. But now they're looking at things with telescopes, super telescopes, the monster telescopes. And they're looking at with super microscopes. Not the kind we used to buy in the chemistry set. Super microscopes. They're looking at creation and they're saying to each other, something is wrong or something is right. Meaning, until now, all of our teachers, all of our professors and rebbeim, all of the professors were saying that leave the spirituality up to the galochim, to the rabbis, to the philosophers, the metaphysics. The philosophers, they think about non-existence. You know, they think about things that don't exist. Beliefs, ideas, they're in the world of ideas. Us scientists, we're tachlis, we're in the concrete world. Tachlis, that's where we live. Now, what happened beginning at that time was that the scientists said that our teachers, our professors, our rebellion, they didn't intentionally bluff us, but they bluffed us. Because what we're finding is that the sheresh of vohu, meaning here it is, of the physical world, the sheresh of the physical world is something that they never imagined. And we need to talk to the rabbi about this. We need to talk to the, well, they needed to talk. We need to talk to the galach about this, to the father, to the priest, to the whatever. We need to talk to the philosopher. We need to talk to the dreamer, to the writer, we need to talk to the people who are oisik in things that you can't see. You can't touch, you can't smell. Because what we're finding is that the underlying sheresh of all that exists contains some mysterious common denominator that cannot be studied or understood. But that seems to be the glue that binds all things together, that unites all of reality. This was the most revolutionary discovery of all history, of all time. When Einstein, who, this was his whole malacha. Now Einstein, you know, spoke about God, especially at the end of his life. He spoke about the Creator. He didn't speak about Gemara Rashi Tosfos. Unfortunately, there was a time when he was young that he got into Frumkeit for a very short time. He was into Yiddishkeit. But had he lived longer, I have no question that he would have been eventually sitting at the dais of the Daf Yomi of the Siyum HaShas. But it didn't work out, no. Chaval. In Shemaim, I'm sure he's learning Torah and everything is good. Now, what Einstein was onto, and that's why in the early years of his career, he was vilified and hated. They made chayzik of him. They mamish made chayzik of him. He didn't use the word God. That was the death sentence for any scientist. Now already it's you can't. But in those years, you couldn't talk about God. A scientist couldn't talk about God. It's a tata disaster. And you're finished. You're done. Your career is over. Einstein worked in Princeton. When he came to America, he worked in Princeton. You got to keep your job. You can't talk about God in Princeton. So, but what he was talking about was God. What Einstein was talking about was God. Not with the word Hashem, but he was talking about God. And that caused a huge commotion because he took the reunion of the high orders and low orders. He took that. He felt that he saw it. His amazing mind was onto this. But unfortunately, since he didn't learn Torah, not even Nigla, certainly not Nister, so he couldn't take it to the further step. He was limited. It's remarkable what he was able to accomplish with that. But he was onto it. He was onto the bigger picture. And this shook up the entire world. So there were many, many scientists who just, their reaction to this, to all this was, nah, it can't be. It can't be. It can't be that there's anything that's not real. There's anything that's not physical. It's just very, very tiny, but we'll get stronger, you know, we'll find it. But it can't be that there's a neshama. It can't be there's a soul. It can't be there's a soul of the universe. Can't be there's a neshama. Now, Sigmund Freud is another Yid. Nabuch. Another Yid. Also a genius. So he was Isaac in the inyan of the neshama. But he also couldn't come to that place to say there's a Rabbeinu Shlomo and there's a neshama. He was talking about the neshama on a neshama. Without the neshama, he didn't know what to do. He never went knock out of his kale. So he had to find all kinds of things to explain the neshama, but it can't be that there's a soul. Karl Marx. He was a big Russian. But he was a Yid. He didn't like to admit that. Him and Engels, both of the two of them, the partners, Marx and Engels. So he was onto the neshama of the Shuk. It's hard to understand what was happening at that time. He was onto the soul of human creativity, of human productivity. He was onto something. And he believed that it depends upon there being a yichud of all people together. And that the only true productivity can come through one unifying force, which he called the state. And this one unifying force will be able to harness that energy of creativity and productivity. It's called communism. He was onto something. But without Torah, without the Ma'amal Yonim, without learning Torah, without knowing Torah, then these things descend into rishus, into communism. And Lenin already took it. Once it fell into Goyish hands. But this is all happening. These were all the children of Tafresh, the children of the revolution, that were trying to understand the world. Marx was trying to understand the economy, the marketplace. Einstein was trying to understand physical matter. Freud was trying to understand the mind, emotions and the mind. They were trying. All three of them realized and understood that there is some mysterious single unifying force behind A, B, and C. Behind, in Einstein, behind physical matter, underneath, above. For Karl Marx, it was the state. And for Freud, it was the ego, the superego, the id, b'chulu. But subconsciousness, but not neshama. Freud couldn't say the word neshama. He couldn't think of the word neshama. They weren't allowed to talk about it. Even now, it's not so pushit for scientists to talk about these things. It's not so pushit. So if Hook is saying, Rav Neir is explaining, Hatir hamadei shel hamivna hapnimi barak lahamchishes hametzias hamerkeves hakayemes b'sarach hachaimer. All scientists are doing now that they have developed, especially that they developed much stronger kalim, is that they're trying to understand the hidden structure, the complex hidden structure of what we can't see with our eyes. In other words, it used to be pre-1840 that scientists were Isaac and only what they were, all they were Isaac in is what they could see with their eyes. The Isaac of science was to try to understand what I could see. That's all scientists were doing in the old days. That's all they were Isaac, what they could see. So, ma'yicholim lasot. That's all they could do. Since Tafresh, all scientists are trying to study is what? They can't see. Right? But they can't see. Look what's going on. You have the smartest scientists on earth that have been spending the last 3 months, and in China, they knew about it a couple months before it was showing, that for the smartest scientists in the world have been trying to figure out what is this little thing that's dragging around. It's alive, it's not alive. What is it? What is it? And how do you stop it? So you have to take it. You could send a rocket. You could send something to be up in the sky for 25 years and to study planets, and they can't figure out this little thing, and the whole world is shut down from this little thing. All they're trying to understand is what we can't see. So what Cook is going to explain in this Torah is the beginning of that reunion of Maisi Bereshis, Maisi Merkava, of Mayim Elyon, Mayim Tachtonim, is where human beings, even those who had no exposure to Kedusha, no exposure to the Zohar Kaddish, never heard of Rabbi Shimon, never heard of the Ariya Kaddish, never heard of the Baal Shem Tov or the Gra, that human minds are going to begin to realize that the Shurish of all that exists is with something that we can't see. Something that we can't study in the way that we were used to studying things, which is visually. Or touching, or smelling, or seeing, or hearing. We can't. So if Cook says that, it's an unbelievable step forward in the history of mankind. That scientists are training us to think in an abstract way, which is always the opposite of all scientific inquiry. The scientists, remember in the old days, the scientists did not believe in anything abstract. Abstraction is for rabbis and philosophers. They didn't believe in anything abstract. And now, in the secular world, the most choshevei chachamim are trying to understand abstractions, things that you can't see. I told you many times over the years, many years ago, I was in a library someplace looking for something, and I came across an interesting study. I've told this to you many times. I came across an interesting study. I don't remember what the study was or what. I don't know. But I came across an interesting study that there was a couple of researchers that they interviewed 500 or 1,000, some was a number, 500 or 1,000 college professors. Oh, yeah, 1,000. 500 in the humanities and 500 in the sciences. 1,000 professors. They went to meet with separately, like the Targum Shivim, you know. So they went to speak to 1,000 professors about religion, about belief, religion, God, and so on. Not about Yiddishkeit or about Goyishkeit, but about religion. And I was reading the results of this study, and it was fascinating. I don't remember the exact numbers, but close. It came out that something like 90% of the scientists that were interviewed believe in a creator. in a all-knowing creator, in this one creator. It was something like 90, 92, 93% of the scientists believed in the creator. They believed in a creator. The Shakespeare guys, the humanities people, the 500 professors who read Chaucer and Shakespeare and paint and play Mozart, the 500 professors of the humanities, it was like 90% of them that did not believe in a creator. And when they asked them the main reason why they didn't believe in a creator, the humanities, however, the Shakespeare people said, because there's not enough scientific evidence. Esther Meisa, listen. Meaning the Amaratzim in science. I mean, the Amaratzim in science. They don't know science. The guy's reading poetry to his girlfriend all day, right? This guy is saying, and he teaches poetry. He teaches, which I happen to love. He teaches poetry. And you ask him, no, Mr. Ma'amin, you believe in God? How can I believe in God? There's not enough scientific evidence. Then when you ask the scientific geniuses, the physicists and the biologists and the chemists, what about God? They say, listen, I don't know, we call him God. You want to call him God, you call him God. There's something out there. Because this is not it. 90%. The other 10%, I guess, believe that I think that George Floyd is the creator of the universe. That's the other 10%. That he created the universe, George Floyd, before he was killed. At some point he created the universe. You know, you can hear something from me about this Indian. Something. That's it. That's enough already. Enough. I don't want to make a pogrom over here in Woodmere. So look what he explains. Hakira Madois Okeres, Rav Avinir is explaining Rav Kook. Hakira Madois Okeres, but the iconos glos of Kolomitsius. Be Moises Besuch Hamivna Pnimishal Homer Tovavo. So the scientists are shocked. They are finding inside of physical matter, they're finding Tohu and Vohu. Uh-oh. All the scientists are doing now is trying to explain what we can't see with our eyes. Like what DNA is. So like when we were in school and the teacher started to teach about DNA, so like we looked at each other, the guys, and we said, like, you ever see one of these things? You're right? You have in the book a whole fancy picture of DNA and RNA, you know, all that stuff. Oh, they're like things connecting, and you know, the little balls, the bullies and the lines. And I said, you know, we all said to each other, yeah, like, why do we have to take the regions in this stuff? You ever see any of this? I never saw one of these things. You ever see a DNA? You ever see a chromosome in your life? What's a chromosome? Where do you see it? But all science is busy with is trying to see that which is unseen, is to understand that which you can't see. And to the best of their abilities, with whatever tools they have, they have been discovering for the past 150 years plus, they've been discovering that there's unbelievable, unimaginable order. Unbelievable order. Just when you look at a snowflake under a microscope, if it doesn't get too warm, you got to do it quickly. It's a perfect geometric shape. And they're finding order. Now this is the v'nahaf haichu of the earlier scientists. They're finding order, and the problem is, like, how did this happen? Like, how did the snowflake work out like that? How did the snowflake turn out to be like that? Like, why aren't there any bumps or nicks or curves? Like, how did that work out? Why are they all perfect angles and different? But perfect. How? So the humanities only deals with imperfections. Otherwise, it's not a good poem. It's not interesting. It's all about imperfections. It's all about Mashallah b'seidem. every movie, every television show, every comedian is about Masha lo b'seder. Scientists are interested in seder. That's how they live. There's a reason why Einstein was a yucky, you understand? Scientists are concerned with seder. That's the business of a scientist, seder. Now, it turns out that the Zohar Kaddish is describing the seder of creation. And the Ari Kaddish then would explain it further. And then the Vilna Gaon, the Ramchal, the Rashash, the Baal Shem HaKadosh would explain how all of this is seder. What's the seder? And therefore we have the Ari HaKadosh, the seder ha-hishtalshelus of all worlds, the seder, the spheres. Where if you didn't know, you'd think that you're looking in your biology book with the DNA. The seder ha-hishtalshelus, seder. People from the outside think that these tzaddikim, the Ari HaKadosh, the Baal Shem HaKadosh, the Vilna Gaon, they were like these mystics that had no connection to reality, that they were detached from reality. The Arizal had a deeper understanding of reality than any person who ever lived. The Ari HaKadosh, his entire life was understanding reality and the seder of reality. What he's saying to the scientists before and after is, Chevra, I hate to tell you this, but there's a seder hishtalshelus. There's chachma, there's keser, chachma, bina, das. There's chesed, gvur, teferes, netzach, chayit, yisayit, and malchus. There's the seder hishtalshelus, which gives birth to the seder that you guys are all excited about, that you guys are trying to figure out. There's a seder. Now, the progress of science post-1840 was unbelievable, because once they were able to acknowledge that the structure, that the world is structured, and the structure is what we can't see with our eyes, that was a huge step forward. And Rav Kook wanted to remind us of the significance of that step forward, because in Rav Kook's way of understanding, which is the same as the Arizal and the Zohar, in Rav Kook's understanding, this means that the Mayim al Yoinim, the lower waters, are rising. And at the same time, the higher waters of Kabbalah are beginning to be taught and revealed, especially through the Baal Shem and Talmidei Baal Shem, the Chsheafutzu Manasecha Chutza, when the wellsprings of Torah, when your wellsprings of the Baal Shem Tov will spread forth into the world. So the higher waters are descending. That's how Rav Kook saw this. That's exciting. Hatir Amadei hu Moshel Amamchish es Hamamse Hamadai b'Sarcha Chaimer. What the scientists, Rav Avinir has explained, what the scientists are describing makes that which is hidden more tangible, more comprehensible. That's what scientists are trying to do, to make the hidden world more comprehensible. Isn't that exactly what we're doing when we're learning Torah? Especially when we're learning Nistar, or we're learning Kabbalah, Chassidus, to try to make the hidden world more comprehensible. That's what scientists are doing now. Until 1840, all they were doing was to try to understand the revealed world. Okay, Shkaya. So the big scientists back in the Middle Ages, they're trying to somehow produce gold, because they wanted to buy some dresses for their mistresses. So they're trying to somehow produce gold in a laboratory. They're trying to produce new chomer. In other words, they want to do yesh me'ay. Now the problem with the alchemists is that they don't believe in ayin. They only believe in yesh. So they here they have a problem. The guy wants to make gold because he wants to be rich so he can get gifts for his girlfriend. But he can't. He's only dealing with yesh. He's taking this yesh. He's trying to make it look like another yesh. I was oh, he just has yesh. There's no ayin. There's only yesh. The yesh is all he had. All they had was the yesh. What about ayin? Ayin. That's the rabbis, the philosophers, the priests. They talk about ayin. Yesh. So how do I make gold? I want to have gold so I can be rich. So everybody afterwards, they made fun of them. How are you supposed to make gold? You have to dig in the ground and find it. You can't make gold in a laboratory. You can't do that. It was such a rachmanis because they were confined to the world of yesh. And they tried as hard as they could to make something of the yesh. But they came to places where they couldn't go any further. Mazel. Beginning with Tough Race with 1840, with the unleashing of the higher waters and the lower waters. So then scientists, realistic people consider themselves to be realistic and grounded people. Realistic and grounded people, scientists began to realize that there's something called ayin. There's something called nothing. And that ayin, that tohu, chomei hiyuli, the Rebbeinu Shalom, depending upon how honest and how far they're able to get, that ayin, guess what? That ayin is the root of our yesh. So by the tzaddikim, like they say in Chabad, that the ayin is b'pshitas and the yesh is, the ayin is b'pshitas. By a tzaddik, the world of ayin is poshut to him. The world of yesh is a problem. By a tzaddik, the ayin is a davar poshut. And the yesh is a chiddush. The yesh is a chiddush. The tzaddik is nispoil. Wow. How could there be such a thing as anything physical? That's a chiddush. Because the tzaddik lives in the world of ayin, and to him, ayin is b'pshitas. Ayin is b'pshitas. Yesh is a chiddush. To those scientists, to the scientists now, ayin less than before, but yesh is a pshitas. Physical matter is poshut, and ayin is a chiddush. And for these years, since that time, the secular world is catching on more and more and more that the physical world is not so poshut, and that the ayin is becoming something which is more obvious, more poshut. The ayin is more bepsitis. And because of that, you have a million self-help books and all these new studies of human nature and happiness and feelings. And they're already, most intelligent people at this point already will at least intellectually concede that money can't make you happy. At least intellectually. They can still be grub affairs, you understand, but they can at least, but most people say, most intelligent people will say, that the shurish is not money. It's not money. It's something else. So you had another Yid. Also a genius. By the name of Eric Fromm. No, I don't know if you read any of his stuff. It's no mitzvah to. So Eric Fromm. So his mechkar, his study was the difference between to have and to be. To have and to be. The materialists were stuck in a world of having. Yesh. But Eric Fromm said that in that world, the world has not found happiness and fulfillment. There's there's having and there's being. And the only place that a human being can find, human being can find happiness is in being, not in having. And since then, there's like a whole new section in Barnes & Noble. I don't know if Barnes & Noble still exists, but there's a whole new section in Barnes & Noble, feeling and thinking and growing and all of these speakers that they go, motivational, you know, speakers, how to find happiness. It used to be that the only way to find happiness was in vohu. Bohu, physical matter. And now they're looking for happiness. Nisim, you're listening. Now they're looking for happiness. They're looking for happiness where? In Tohu. Now the place to find happiness is in Tohu. What changed? What changed? So it used to be that you had the nobleman, the rich noblemen, and you had the zlobs, the serfs, right? In India, you had the caste, you had the elyonim and the tachtainim. And everything that separated between one sug of a human being and another sug of a human being was kesef, kesef, kesef. That's what separated between the nobleman and the serf. That's what separates between this the big person and the little person. Since that time of 1840, what began to change was, you know what? A lot of the rich people are unhappy. And you know what? A lot of the poyers, the peasants, are happy. How could that be? If happiness, if all that you have is yesh, then science would dictate that the more yesh you have, the more fulfillment you have. The more you have, the better your life is. That's how the world always was. Then something changed. And Eric Fromm nailed it. And he was saying that no. There's having and there's being. Human happiness is rooted in being, not in having. The Baruch Shem is giving us a little bit of a shiur in that Indian these last couple of months. But human happiness is in being, which is ayin. Ayin, what's being? What are you talking about? The scientists, what are you talking about? The same, you can have a firm person, and you can say over to him a piece of Noam Elimelech, and he'll say to you, a guy that sits and learns Gemara all day, and he'll say to the guy that's sitting and enjoying a Noam Elimelech on Shabbos morning, you know, with a coffee or something, he's learning a Noam Elimelech, he's mabsh, and the guy with the Gemara says, what are you doing? So he says, do you see this Noam Elimelech? He says, what's that? What are you talking about? And he shows him Noam Elimelech, and the guy looks at this lambda looks at Noam Elimelech, and he says, what is he talking about? What is that? What is he talking about? That's not real. Talk to me about a cow. Talk to me about Ashtukla Vadazara and Masechta Vadazara. Talk to me about something that's real. Talk to me about something that I can see with my eyes. Talk to me about something. That's why this Lamdan probably even skips the Agadat in the Gemara. Just he doesn't want to not be by the dais of the Daf Yomi, so maybe he has to, you know, whatever, say that he learned it. But really, he doesn't need the Agadat. The Agadat is talking about Ayin. He only wants the Yesh. Even if Torah. So you show him a Noam Elimelech, and he says about the Noam Elimelech, what a nice piece, oh, Simi's over there, a nice piece from the Mor of Hashemesh, right, Simi? You show this Lamdan, a nice piece from the Mor, you thought that I didn't look at it. You show him a piece from the Mor of Hashemesh, and this Lamdan says, what's he talking about? What's he talking about, Rabbi Shapiro? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? What's his does? Talk to me about talk to him about, even from what time do you say Kriya Shema at night? We're talking now concrete. What time is it? How do you make a pair of tefillin? What's its tzitzis? But then comes the Noam Eli Melech and the Mor V'Shemesh. Mor V'Shemesh was one of the biggest talmidim from the Noam Eli Melech. Then they come to Tzaddikim, they say, you know what the tzitzis is? What does it mean when you're saying Hashem Echad? What does it mean that God is one? So the Lamdan says, Hartman's can shine, do me a favor. Don't bother me with all this fluffy stuff, this amaratzis. I'm talking about the real world. The real world is, what time is Kriya Shema? What time is Kriya Shema? What are you hacking me about? What does it mean that God is one? What are you talking about? And you're sitting with Noam Eli Melech, and you're going out of your kelim, you want to talk to this friend of yours, the Lamdan, and the two of them can't understand each other. He's talking the language of Ma'aseh Bereishis, he's talking the language of Ma'aseh Merkava. He's talking the language of Ma'aseh Elyonim, he's talking the language of Ma'aseh Tachtonim. He's talking the language of Nigla, he's talking the language of Nista. It's one Torah, but even in Torah there could be this disconnect. And by the way, the guy with the Noam Eli Melech has to learn the Gemara also. And that's what this Torah is about also, what Rav Kook is saying. It has to be grounded. He has to see it in the world. He has to see it in the Blat Gemara. And he has to understand good a Blat Gemara. And all the Rav Kook was crying about was that, why can't we have that? The Baal Shem Tov and why can't we have the Baal Shem Tov and the Vilna Gaon dance together at the Chasana? Which is how we ended last week, or we were talking about last week. Why can't they be together? All life seen and unseen. Seen and unseen. So the guy with the Noam Eli Melech, he thinks that the Lamdan doesn't have a soul. He just has a brain. He's some Balgaiva that likes to show off fancy learning. The truth is he's not. He's a good guy. He just doesn't know. He doesn't know. No one ever explained to him. No one ever took him by the hand and brought him into the world of metaphysics, of the invisible, of the unseen. So the Lamdan just wants to be Isaac with what he could see. And then you got the other guy that's sitting there all day long with the Noam Eli Melech, and he doesn't want to learn a Blat Gemara, because no one ever showed him the real underlying beauty of that structure of a Blat Gemara, what it means, a Blat Gemara, and how beautiful the world is that God created. So he'd rather close himself up with the Noam Eli Melech than the Blat Gemara. And there are different shiroshim, each neshama, of course we learn these things, but I'm talking about in a very general, broad way that there's a disconnect. So Rav Kook is explaining, Rav Avinash says that HaMetziyah Shana Toivsim HaMesh Zachushim Himi B'chinasen HaOilam. All of the years, the only world that existed was the world that I'm able to grasp with my senses, with my eyes, my ears, my nose, my mouth, only what I could grasp, but I was able with the chushim. And that's all that science was Isaac in for all the years. But then it changed. Something amazing began to happen. Kishakol atnuais, the next dark words there are of Cook's words. Kishakol atnuais shahoivais v'shehes havu boilamim lifnei yitzirasim hagmura. All movement, all motion, all that ever existed and exists in all worlds had an existence lifnei yitziras magmur. They began to realize that there's existence before physical existence. In other words, before this table became a table, in the Seder Vishtalshalas, there's something else until it became a physical table. And that this physical table is only the final stop of a long journey of something metaphysical, something that's not physical. That its existence was before it existed as a table. So scientists were all excited about cells and atoms. Whoa, right? Cells, that's exciting. So the table existed before it was a table. But how? As molecules. As molecules, as atoms, and human beings, molecules, atoms, cells, that's how we existed before we existed. So they saw from that point, they began to see from the Histalshalus, they got closer to the Ayin, and they began to see things that were not any more like regular Yesh. They started to look at molecules. They began to look at molecules. And molecules, until that time, were Ayin. And now they're starting to see that this table has an existence before it was a table. Not just as a piece of a tree. It has an internal, mysterious tohu. There's a tohu. This is the scientific revolution. Unbelievable. Gets the middle of a sentence. We're not going to be able to finish this sentence today. Maybe even not next week. It's a long sentence. So Rabbi Avineri explains, let's just finish this piece. Scientists began to study things to try to understand what this was before it became a table. That's what they're studying now. Tables. That's ready for the old days. We're trying to understand what was this before it was a table. Hamada materialisti ta'an ki mashani roa kaya mashani loya loya kaya. The materialist scientists, the old scientists, and the ones who still are holding on to this mahalach, the materialists, they say that what I could see exists, and what I don't see doesn't exist. Aristo, cause of ki mashareisi mahava riya, mashalo reisi lokai. Aristotle said that what I see exists and what I don't see doesn't exist. Atta now, in modern times, post-1840, that's how we measure modern, post-1840. Hamada Maven, science understands, ki anigla shel hamada, that which is revealed in science, in other words, that they can begin to see, that they're seeing in science, is Mekuvan al pi hanista shel hamada, comes from the hidden of science that they didn't see beforehand. That they came now to another level and they're seeing something that was the nista behind this nigla. Until now they only saw the nigla, that which was revealed, the tree, the table, and now they found the nista. Now they're limited in how much nista, because they're not learning Zohar, but they're finding the nista, not going to the whole Seder Stausles. That's where we go. But they're looking at nista in order to explain the nigla. They're looking at the molecules in order to explain the table. That's an einfach, that's a chiddush. So the scientists don't realize it. But every scientist is by definition, any serious, honest scientist is by definition trying to learn Kabbalah. But he's limited. He doesn't have the tools, but he's trying to learn Kabbalah. He's trying to learn the Seder Histalshalus of how did this get to be a table. Right now, he's up to molecules. Then they were able to find atoms. And then they were able to find, the atoms. So until they found that they're electrons, but they thought the atom is the shayrish. Then they said, no, chevra, there's a new shayrish. They're called electrons and protons and neutrons. That's the shayrish. And they keep on going right there. They're trying to find the ayin. The scientists are trying to get to the ayin. We, Baruch Hashem, we were given the ayin. That's how we were raised. And those who are privileged to study Pnimis HaTorah are studying this all the time, the Seder Histalshalus. The scientists are trying to understand ayin. They're trying to get to the ayin. So they got it down from being a table. They got it down to being some elements and the molecule has atoms, and the atoms has subatomic particles, and those particles have subparticles. And they're trying to get to the ayin. And when the scientists, like Einstein in his last entries, when the scientist gets to the last stop that he can finally get to, then if he's honest, he hears the words that says, Ani Hashem. V'yadatem k'ani Hashem. Ani Hashem. So the scientist says to the table, you're God? That's idolatry. And the table says, no. Not this. Keep on going to the ayin. But the ayin that is the shirish hashiroshim of the table, v'yadatim, you should know, ani Hashem. The table is Hashem. Now, those words are very dangerous if it's left without the entire context. But that's what it is. And that's the Baal Shem HaKadosh, that's all he was talking about. That's what it means in Malay Chalaritz Kaveda. So there are those who couldn't deal with that reality and they had to make it some sort of a separation or a distance. And they had different interpretations of Tzimtzum. I'm not going into it now. But Ani Hashem. The table? Yep. It's the ayin inside the yesh. The Ani. Which Ani is the Oisius ayin. It's the same letters, Ani and ayin. Ani Hashem. Ani is ayin. Ani is ayin. For the scientist who gets to that place, there's nothing more comforting than in putting on tefillin and making kiddush Friday night. For the scientist who doesn't get to that place, it's a life of bewilderment, wonder, and immeasurable frustration. Unbelievable frustration. So the ones who don't get to ayin, the scientists who get to the ayin, Ani Hashem, Yiddishkeit, Avodas Hashem. Einstein was at the threshold of that. Chaval, chaval, chaval. He had to break through so many layers of darkness to get to the place that he got to. But he was a very Magushim Dika person. With all of his brilliance, he was very Magushim in the Nyonim of this world. And that held him back from getting to the ayin that he could have gotten to, maybe had he lived longer and dropped some of his girlfriends. Maybe he could have gotten to the place of ayin. He was just there at the end. Just there at the end. That's why you see, even in the earlier years, who was really the sheresh of all modern science? Bamis, is Sir Isaac Newton, who preceded that time. Newton was the Elui of all the Eluim in the world of science. I was given a frumer. He was a frumer. But he didn't yet have the flood. He didn't have the floodgates weren't yet open. Newton was onto something very, very big. But he didn't have the floodgates weren't yet open for Newton. He was onto something. It's amazing. He was onto something. It's not just by Jews. Because it's the whole world. They're already pre-earthquake, pre-volcano reverberations in those years. It was beginning. The worlds were shaking, mamish. And Sir Isaac Newton was onto something. He was a genius. And the ones who get to ayin, the scientists who get to ayin, they're the firmest people. The firmest people. You talk to them, it's all about the Baruch Shalom. It's all about the abstract, all about the intangible. You talk like Professor Aumann. He's a genius. He's a mathematician, scientist. You talk to him. He is l'chadoidi. And you say, but Professor Aumann, what are you so into l'chadoidi? You can't write it on a blackboard. Look, you can't put l'chadoidi on a blackboard. He says, what are you talking about? The blackboard comes from l'chadoidi. The blackboard comes from l'chadoidi. These people have a tremendous chush for elokus because they're pushing themselves closer and closer to ayin. We talk about it. They're studying it. If you learn Sfarim HaKadoshim, Pnimis HaTorah, you're pushing yourself closer and closer and closer to the world of Ayin. When you learn Chassidus, you're closer and closer to the world of Ayin. It's the same study. Everybody's trying to get to the Ayin. High orders and low orders. Okay, Bez Hashem, Chavre will continue. We'll continue next day of Shabbos. Every Shabbos left again, Shabbos, Balayischa. In the Chutz Lars of Balayischa, and it's a Sel, it's already Pasha Shlach. Everybody should be healthy and strong. Nisim, you're still in Eretz Yisrael? Okay, everybody should be here and there. Whoever's here or there should be safe. We should all be there very soon, Be'ez Hashem.